Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable. Super excited to be here as always with my two partners in crime, Wade McFall, retired assistant special agent in charge. It's a very fancy title for basically a well-paid babysitter for a bunch of OIG agents who didn't want to do their job. Wade is a retired assistant special agent in charge from the LA field office and is now a director on our investigative team, runs a bunch of projects. Wade, I always say Wade is the utility player, and that's great, right? You know, you spend a bunch of years in this space and then you kind of just plug and play into things. And that's one thing that we really appreciate having him here at Advise. And of course, Matt Kachansky, the retired special agent in charge from the OIG and the retired UPIC director and our senior director here running payment integrity. A lot of people don't know, but Matt left HHS OIG for a small period of time and was the number two at the Office of Investigations for NASA OIG, where he investigated the theft of, among other things, moon rocks. Fun stuff.
And the NOAC case. Remember the astronaut that tried to kidnap the girlfriend of the other? Yes.
Pooping the diaper, and it wasn't even New Year's Eve. So anybody who's choosing to put a diaper on and just grind that 20 hours drive,
and the kidnapping kit in the trunk.
Yeah, and I would say at the end of the day, if you're putting on a diaper and driving 20 hours to go deal with a former boyfriend, you got some issues that you need to deal with at the end of the day that we may have to work to resolve.
She had some issues and lots of top secret information that she could have easily sold.
A lot of that stuff. So, and I am still Eric Rubenstein, the senior director of litigation, fraud, waste, abuse support here at Advise. And we want to continue our theme. We're gonna be going in the next couple of weeks. We're gonna be going back to talking about operational issues, SAU operational issues, particularly in 2026, new initiatives that are coming out. Big thing that we're seeing out there, obviously, and the confusion in skin substitutes that are out there, policy-wise, LCDs, NCDs, and the like. So we're going to be getting into some of those issues from an SIU operational perspective. Always going to be talking about data. Everybody's talking about AI and data and the like. Right now, I'm spending a lot of my time looking at AI when it comes to cats arguing with people dressed up as doctors and Olympians. I saw one the other day. It was a cat dressed up in a onesie that was getting ready to do Greco-Roman wrestling, and it was arguing with the ref over the pin. I thought it was hysterical. But anyway, I digress. We want to talk today. The other day, great press release about a case that came out involving a doctor and a clinic assistant involved in a pretty large scale fraud scheme, $3.1 million, 2016 to 2017, 1 year charge. Always remember that your indictment, your plea agreement, the time period charged is not always exclusive to the time period of the fraud. You know, I think one of the big things that we often see is that at the end of the day, a trial or a plea will result in a narrowed time period from what the fraud that was identified by the investigators. And, you know, Wade, we've talked about this a lot, how investigators will come up with a much shorter period of time for an alleged fraud scheme, but you have to really narrow it down. So don't get caught up by the fact that it's 2016, 2017, you know, and where it all comes down to. There was a trial in this case, so that's going to create the delays. You had COVID that went on for a few days. So we're looking at something that is now about, you know, going on 10 years, 9 years old. But don't be caught up in the time period. Just be caught up in what the facts were. This one was a little bit of the cornucopia. And again, it's hitting on the big ones. Adult daycare, whether it's adult medical daycare, adult social daycare. So when you hear adult daycare, the very first thing you have to think of is the Medicare Companion Program, Medicaid, as a program and as a payer. Medicare does not pay for adult daycare. That is a Medicaid payment program. And so you have to look at this and kind of see already from the top, there's going to be Medicaid. In a lot of these instances, those that are covered by Medicaid are also collaterally covered by Medicare under the dual benefit eligibility. We like to call those the Medi-Medis, Medicare, Medicaid. And you kind of see where that amalgamation comes in, particularly from a data perspective. And the challenge in the data is going to be on the SIU perspective. You may not have that Medicare data if you are a Medicaid SIU or you're doing Medicaid investigations. And so, Wade, we talk about this all the time. And again, we're not reinventing the wheel. Same circus, different clowns. Captive audience. Now, you have done a ton of these cases. When you first came over to advise and you were on one of our SIU investigative teams, you were strictly on a Medicaid team, a lot of adult daycare, a lot of adult social daycare, a lot of adult medical daycare, captive audience. Now, in this case, the big issues were sham rental agreements being paid for the referral of patients and excessive lab tests and excessive prescriptions. And Matt, we're going to get to you in a minute on that. But Wade, you know, it all starts with the data. And I know that you love data. I know how much you love looking at data. I can't say it with a straight face. But, you know, this is one of those things where you don't have to be a data analyst. You don't have to be a data scientist. It's, you know, in this particular case, the provider in question, the doctor, was going to multiple adult daycares. So you've got instances where billings are coming out of the daycare. You've also got instances where the provider is the referring provider. Now, he's not ultimately, this doctor is not doing the lab tests. He's not writing the scripts. So you've got data that's got to come from the lab. You've got data that's got to come from prescription drug events and the like. But this is still one of those instances where, and particularly for me, when I look and I see it's a one-year period, that means to me there's a spike. This is data, but also this is one of those instances where once the data starts to tell you something, this is where virtual boots on the ground, picking up the phone and having the conversations with the patients becomes important. So talk a little bit, Wade, from an investigator's perspective. What are the questions you're asking these people? What are the things that you're looking to confirm in the scheme that we're looking at?
Right. I think one of the first things, just to back up a little bit, is we were talking about like the data mining and what red flags should appear as you're looking at this type of data. excuse me, like common services that you're going to see, but also the connection between the different locations. And that's not necessarily fraud on its face. And I mean, it could lead to that. You'd have to be dig a little bit deeper, but it would not be uncommon for like one referring physician to have a number of people at an adult daycare center because they may be co-located with his office. You know, that wouldn't be uncommon. But if you have a number of them, 4, 5, 6 different adult daycares, and this one physician is not only referring to the adult daycare, but there's crossover with prescriptions that are being written, that type of thing. That's where it's more of a red flag, and it leans more towards maybe a fraudulent situation. And we talk about the data mining, but there's a couple different programs that really help to kind of simplify this and like show this graphically. One of them that I know we used to use a lot in the OIG was I2 Analyst Notebook. And it was very simple that you could take different data sets, basically drag and drop them into like a portal. And it would kick out these graphics that you could print out on a poster, which were great for presentations to U.S. Attorney's Office and the like. But it would show, you know, a physician and the crossover of beneficiaries, the crossover of services provided. I mean, even if you have the prescription data, it'll show all those crossovers. So that really kind of helps bring it forward. But as far as your question, as far as the types of things you're gonna ask, there's only so much you can do data analytics wise. At some point, you have to get on the phone, or you have to get out there and talk to the members that are there. And they're pretty, you know, it's a pretty simple interview. You're asking what types of services they're receiving. You know, are they there on this wasn't one of the allegations in this case, but for an adult daycare, it's like, when are you there? Are you there every day? Are they billing for a per diem for a full day? Are they billing for a half day per diem? Are they billing for the add-on code? There's like other services not included. So you want to find out what their actually involvement with the daycare center is. How did they come about this? Was it recommended by their physician? You know, charge those additional services, which would include medicine management, that type of thing. So it's just really a matter of talking to the member, finding out what's not so apparent in the billings, or either confirming or denying if the billings are accurate with what they're actually getting on a day-to-day basis. So it's really, you know, and the fact that they're in these facilities, maybe they're a little bit more elderly. They might have just like physical reasons why they're there. They might be difficult to interview. They may not be very articulate if they're, you know, really old and have some cognitive issues. But just to speak to them and have kind of a common set of questions that you're asking to everybody, and you're really just trying to find out what it is that they're getting from the facility as far as right. prescriptions, referrals, things of that nature.
And this is where, to an extent, not just speaking to the members, but potentially speaking to the family members of the members can really go a long way. You know, and I think particularly in this instance where there were prescriptions that were being written that were not medically necessary and lab tests, the interesting thing to me is, you know, when you work cases that involve this, you know, I remember when I was at the OIG and we started to work a lot of these cases involving the topicals. The Voltaren, which is now over the counter, you can get Voltaren over the counter, diclofenac sodium as its prescription, you know, or the lidocaines, which is, you know, the 5% lidocaine, which is prescription 4% over the counter. When you start speaking to these people and you find that you've got dozens and dozens of people all getting the exact same medication, a little bit like during the days of the compounding, where it's kind of the same thing. And you know, the theme is the doctor is the same doctor, and these adult daycares are different. The people are different. Nothing is the same. And you look and you see, you know, Dr. Smith in the course of a month has written 300 prescriptions for 5% lidocaine, or the prescription version of Voltaren, or whatever it may be, that raises that, you know, that red flag. The last piece, Wade, is because states have different regulations regarding what is required to be provided in the adult daycares and what is not provided. This is one of those instances where when you have an allegation where you start to see these common themes in the addresses and you've identified through your due diligence that this is an adult daycare, you really need to go and look at what that policy says to understand what is the minimum required level of service that's provided, right? Because at the end of the day, and I know when you were on our One Medicaid contract, I know that you spent a lot of time reviewing these documents where it really doesn't need to be at sort of the CPC or the documentation order, because there isn't a ton of information. This is something that really can be done from a desk investigator's perspective, right? But so before I go to Matt, just real briefly, you can, if you have all the documents and you have kind of what that minimum policy set is, this really is something that can be in an investigator's wheelhouse to look at.
Yeah, and the documents that I was reviewing, the medical records, it like I said, it wasn't a CPC level review. It was basically, it could be as simple as, were they there during these hours? You know, were they there every day from whatever 8 to 4, if they're charging for a full day per diem, were they there for a half a day? So you're looking at things like sign-in sheets, there's usually some
activity
kind of
activity sheets.
Yeah, daily notes that are saying what's happening throughout the day. You know, things of that nature. So it's pretty simple stuff. It's almost like a, is it there or is it not? You're not reviewing to look at levels of care and things of that nature. It's like, there's a couple, 4 or 5 things you're looking at, and it's just a checkbox. Are they there or are they not? But in most cases, what I was finding is that, and I'd have to preface this with, you know, whoever was reviewing my work, but, you know, I'm not a handwriting expert, but sometimes it's very clear and obvious that this is a photocopy of a signature, or this is a sign-in sheet that's been, the days have already been checked, and it's the same photocopy of the sign-in sheet that's just getting the date changed. So it's simple things like that that you can show that are definitely red flags if you have, you know, sign-in sheets. And it's as simple as looking for, you know, a certain, maybe it's a fold or a tear or a staple or something that's present on every one of those documents that you can say, in my opinion, I'm not a handwriting expert or a documentation expert, but you can convince the person you're trying to convince that these are photocopies of the same document and they're just changing the dates. So it's those kind of simplistic actions that you're taking.
It's a great point, Wade, because what you do see when you see these records sometimes is exactly that, is that there's a staple mark or a fold, or the photocopier has something on the glass that repeats itself often. And, you know, the thing I'll say is that you sometimes, even though you're not a question in documents expert, or you may not be a handwriting expert, you know, as you develop experience in the job that you've got, there is something, you know, I would always say this doesn't pass the stink test. Something doesn't seem right, you know, as Judge Judy would always say, you know, if you're telling the truth, you don't have to think about it, right? If it's something, you don't have to really put a lot of thought if it's the right thing. It's a lot easier to provide these things and kind of look at it. Does it pass the stink test or not pass the stink test? And that becomes part of that collective of what are the themes in things. You don't need to necessarily have something that points directly to something, but you can have themes. Hey, look, I just looked at 30 of these records, and guess what? There's a staple mark in the exact same spot on all of them. There's, you know, whatever it may be, there's a smudge that appears on all of them. And those are the kind of, you know, kind of those things. So Matt, I want to go to you, because now that, you know, the piece of the puzzle is that oftentimes, because of this bifurcation of investigations, pharmacy investigations are typically done by the contracted PBM, and the medical claims investigations are conducted by the SIU. And oftentimes, there isn't a crossover, right? So the PBM, they don't have relationships with healthcare providers, meaning the doctors or the ordering physicians. And so the PBMs cannot necessarily obtain copies of certain documents and records, but the SIU can obtain those documents and then through the PBM get what they need. But this is one of those examples from a data perspective. While an SIU investigator on the medical side may not understand how to do a PBM-related investigation, they should have the ability to get that data, which is known in many cases, the parlance is PDE or prescription drug event data, get that data and be able to understand. Like in this particular case, had they amalgamated the data, somebody would have hopefully seen among that data, hey, this particular doctor is writing a ridiculous number of prescriptions for lidocaine or whatever it is. Because you have to think, and we don't know from the press release if it was the same prescription or a myriad of prescriptions. I'm going to take a stab and say it was probably a similar prescription. But certainly there are going to be spikes in the data. There are going to be anomalies that come out that when you are meshing the data, even though you may not have a pharmacy investigation, it becomes part and parcel to how your medical investigations, your medical claims investigations are going to go.
Yeah. When I was, you know, when I was investigating things, you know, any case I had, we would do it as a task force. I would bring in other agencies, whether it's Department of Defense, DCIS, OPM, the postal inspectors for the commercial pay, and we compare the data from all those sources, all of those lines of business. The same is true with, you know, the lines of business within a plan, the medical plan, the pharmacy plan, they may have a separate behavioral health plan. Without getting all of that data, you don't get a complete picture of what services are being billed for any of the beneficiaries or members that you're looking at. You'll see that they're getting the adult daycare, and you're seeing, you know, that there's some services being rendered, but you don't know what they're being prescribed. You don't know what's being, perhaps they're getting also some social work or clinical therapy sessions done or billed by another contractor or vendor to that adult daycare center. That's, you know, captured audiences, they bring in a lot of those types of specialties, you know, the podiatrists, the opticians, the therapists, all of those things, physical therapists. You don't know if they're getting billed for all of those things because you don't have all of that in front of you at one time. To get the complete portrait and to make the complete link analysis that Wade was talking about through I2, you need all of that. And so you've got to go to all of those sources to get that. With the UPIC, we had Part A and Part B data for Medicare and Medicaid. So we were able to do that. We worked with the medic to get the PDE. And lo and behold, they had cases open. We had cases open, didn't know it, combined them, and we were working them together. The same can be true just within a single SIU or across SIUs if there's other plans that are providing other types of care.
So this is one of those examples where it is very important for the SIU team, the payment integrity team, to work very closely with their counterparts in other things. For example, as you just expressed, it is very important for the SIU investigator team on the medical side of the house to have an open dialogue and communication with the PBM. Similarly, a lot of plans farm out behavioral health claims, right? And so you have a behavioral health SIU. You've got to work together with those because, lo and behold, maybe you're finding that the behavioral health claims have something in them that's giving you pause. For example, what if someone was spending, 3 hours or 4 hours a day on intensive outpatient therapy? And in 3 or 4 hours of intensive outpatient therapy on that same day, there's a PT claim, there's this, there's that. How many hours in the day can this person be driving around for visits? So these things really, really do come into play. And so Matt, as we kind of wrap up, the important piece for me is it's cross-pollination, but it's also those lines of communication, but also let's talk as the wrap up here is training. SIU investigators may not need to fully understand what the PBM investigators do, but they certainly should understand, hey, what do the PBMs have access to? How do they do what they do, right? There has to be cross-pollination or you are working in an absolute vacuum.
Yeah, you've got to know what resources you can go to for the information, because without that, you're working on an island and you're not going to see the whole picture. One thing I will throw out, Wade talked about going to the members and talking to them. One thing we did at the UPIC, we had assisted living facilities where this was going on. We would go to those facilities. We would bring pictures of the providers that were supposedly seeing these patients and say, have you ever seen this person? No, don't know who that is. It's pretty good.
It's a great point. And this kind of lends to our wrap up, which is sometimes it's not just talking to the members, it's talking to family of the members, because the family could be intrinsically involved. And so this kind of gets to a little bit of the last piece of the wrap up, which is that sometimes we're speaking to members who may not be technologically savvy or advanced, right? So we're calling them on their landline. We're talking to them. This may be one of those instances where you speak to the member and you set up a follow-up with the member's family member. And that follow-up includes maybe a Zoom, a Teams, a FaceTime where you can share a document, right? And when we do our training, oftentimes the training that we do for some of our SIU clients, it involves ultimately a practical where part of that practical includes mock interviews and mock discussions. And one of the things that we've been incorporating is the use of technology into those discussions. This is exactly the reason, because SIUs should not be going out and doing a lot of field work, right? We certainly have been stressing the importance of SIU investigators not going out and doing surveillance and things of that sort. But what if you're working in California and you're doing investigations on providers in Florida? You don't have the physical ability to go out in the field. And so you have to find novel approaches to be able to say, hey, is this the provider? Because at the end of the day, if this provider is ordering diagnostic tests and prescriptions, all this other stuff, and the member says, I've never seen this person, I have no idea who they are, it's an important piece of the investigative toolbox. And that's where sometimes you may not have the ability to directly interact with the member, but the member's family can give you some information that can be of probative value for your investigations. So, when we look at these cases, we really do find nuggets of information that, while it may not fit the square peg and the square hole, we're certainly not looking to beat the square peg into the round hole. We're finding pieces of these investigations that we know in the public record that clearly support and show us how we can further existing investigations or avenues of opportunity for new investigations that come up as a result of where the data lies. So, good stuff. And, you know, particularly when you see these captive audiences, whether it be the providers going to the community room of a low income building that's populated with a bunch of Medicaid beneficiaries and senior citizens, where it's supplemental income, Section 8 type housing, or, you know, the adult daycare, where it really is, you know, I consider these to be predatory cases in nature, because you really do have a captive audience. And these people don't understand that they're being used in a predatory fashion, particularly when kickbacks are being paid for the referrals and things of that sort. So these kind of cases become interesting because they typically have multiple tentacles. And so you just need to kind of figure out what's the piece of the puzzle that makes the most relevance in your investigative purview. So as always, guys, you guys provide great insight. I appreciate the time that you spend with us. And again, always jump on our LinkedIn, the Advise LinkedIn. We're hitting almost 80,000 followers, which is where you can weekly find our weekly podcasts, our LinkedIn Lives, same as our YouTube channel, our Spotify channel. Get your newsletter every week to us, info@advisehealth.com. And until the next OIG roundtable, we'll see you. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Thank you all.
Thank you.